Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome. You're listening to Mark My Words here on the Life Coach Radio Network. And today is Sunday, March 16th, 2014. I'm Mark Shaw, broadcasting live from New York City. I'm a certified life and business coach, and twice per month I host Mark My Words, which is a life coaching-oriented show where I interview various people with inspiring life stories of overcoming adversity. I also speak with authors of great coaching-related books and programs, as well as many others who have great things to say. So tune in the first and third Sunday of every month. And today's topic is a little near and dear to my heart. And part of me wants to say, unfortunately so. I myself, as people who know me probably already know this, was a bullied kid. So I can certainly relate well to the topic of bullying, and my heart goes out to any kids that face any form of bullying in our schools. And it's a common topic, a very popular topic today. Lots of people are talking and writing about it. And my guest tonight has been doing some really amazing work in the area of bullying, raising awareness about bullying, particularly among teenagers, high school students in sports. So I'm going to introduce him in just a minute, but I also just want to tell a brief story about a very healing moment that happened with regard to my childhood bullying, and it only happened a few years ago. So there I was, bullied from elementary school, junior high school, high school, and I was at my 25-year reunion, and a gentleman came up to me and said hello, asked me if I remembered him. I actually didn't at first, just very, very vaguely, and he said, "Well, I'm really, really happy to see you here. You're one of the people that I hoped to see here, and that's because you're one of the people that I bullied back in high school, and I made your life pretty miserable by pushing you into the lockers, by putting thumbtacks on your chair, putting gum on your chair, slamming you into walls, things like that." At which point I said, "Yes, now I remember." So he said to me, "Well, I was hoping to see you because I wanted to make sure that I had the opportunity to apologize to you for being such a jerk." And I was pretty stunned by that, and I appreciated that. It was a very healing moment. I told many people that story over the following 5 years, and that was at my 25-year reunion. And over the following 5 years, I told that story in a lot of my seminars and classes as it was relevant to many different topics. And then I saw him again at my 30-year reunion. Now, if anybody was wondering how old I am, I guess I just gave that away. But I didn't tell you when the 30-year reunion was. But it wasn't very long ago. And I saw him, and I asked him, I said, "Do you remember the conversation we had 5 years ago?" He said, "Yes, I do." And I said, "Well, there's a couple of things that I wanted to respond to you about that kind of came to mind afterwards, if you don't mind." He said, "Sure, that's great." So the first thing I said was, "You owe me about $10,000 for all the therapy I had to go through to become a whole person again." So we had a nice opportunity to laugh over that. And I said, "But seriously, in the last 5 years, we've been having a lot of awareness around teen bullying and particularly the teen suicide rate among teenagers who are bullied, and particularly among gay and lesbian teenagers, GLBT teenagers." So I said, "So seriously, I just need to let you know that you were playing with fire back then when you were doing that to me and any of the other kids." Now, fortunately, I never experienced those kinds of feelings and thoughts in response to being bullied. I'm not sure why, but I'm thankful. But I easily could have, as so many do. So I explained that to him, and I said, "The little kid in me needs you to know that." So he smiled and he said, "Mark, I totally get that, and I need to let you know who I've become." And he said, "I have an 11-year-old daughter, and if she was to do any one of the things that I did to you and other kids, particularly those I thought were gay, I would be absolutely mortified and humiliated. And I need you to know that that's who I've become." And it was really an incredible, incredible moment. We ended up hugging, and we had tears in our eyes, and everybody's looking over and like, "What's up with them over there?" So very lovely. And then fast forward, I had the opportunity to go back to my high school and talk to kids about what it was like growing up gay in those hallways. And I talked a lot about the bullying. It was just really an incredible experience, seeing how much things have changed with regard to a lot of that. I'm excited to talk about tonight's topic with our guest, Randy Nathan, and because as much as has changed and as exciting as that was for me, there's a lot that hasn't changed. And as we know, every time we turn around the news, there's another story about this kind of stuff, a lot of it being in the sports world. And it's still something that needs to be talked about. And I'm really happy to have Randy on the show with us tonight. He's written an amazing book about bullying in teen sports, high school sports. And I know he does amazing work out there, which I'll let him tell you all about, with regard to coaching high school students and others on many things, but also including this area. So, Randy, thank you for being here, and welcome to Mark My Words.
Thanks, Mark. Thanks for the invitation. It's great to be here. I appreciate it, bro.
Oh, certainly, certainly. So, also, just so you all know, Randy and I, we talked together a little bit. Randy also used to be an instructor at IPEC, the Institute for Professional Excellence in Coaching, where I teach. And so we've had the opportunity to share the front of the room together. And I can tell you all, Randy's a lot of fun. So we don't think we're going to be starved for conversation in this interview, do we, Randy?
Oh, just you wait.
Well, cool. So great. Well, thanks again, Randy, for being here. Really appreciate it. And it's a really, really important topic. And I'm hoping that a lot of people who are tuning in are ready to learn quite a bit from you. And I also hope that folks have questions, by the way. So please feel free to give us a call, because we'll be taking your calls live on the air tonight. The call-in number is 646-716-9397. That's 646-716-9397. So call in with any questions or comments that you have. So Randy, you talk a lot about what you call a culture of bullying in sports. So I want to elaborate on that a little bit and get your thoughts on that and kind of open the discussion there. But first, tell me a little bit about how did you develop a passion for this particular topic and decide to help out with issues such as this?
Good question, Mark. Always the appropriate one to start off with. Very open-ended, so I can keep on going as long as I need. I've always done intervention and bullying and spoke on general elements of bullying. But about 2.5 years ago, following a private baseball team that I had put together after experiencing a couple unruly parents, I was visiting Sports Authority here in East Hanover, New Jersey, because we were doing a shoe drive for Haiti. And the manager came out and asked me about what it was that I did. I was a life coach and my speaking and my practice and my business. And he offered his store, his name is Marty Teller, offered me his store to present. And in that moment, I was, that's really something, because there's a lot of bullying in sports that takes place. And it was just something I said on a whim, believing in it, but not really knowing exactly what I had just acknowledged. And so from that point forward, I started doing information, putting together a presentation. The first one I did was Bullying in Sports, What Parents, Coaches, and Players Need to Know. And I started speaking in Sports Authority locations in New Jersey. I was invited to speak at the International Bullying Prevention Association's conference in Kansas City in November 2012. And while presenting this topic for the first time at that kind of large venture location, I had about 7,500 people, standing room only, and about 20 people lined up following my remarks and asked for a copy of my book. And as every presenter knows, when someone asks you for your book, you say, thank you very much, and I am in the process of writing it now, and please give me your email, and I will send it to you when I'm done. And so I went back to my hotel room and literally started writing what I had just presented into a book format and began the process of writing the book beginning in November of 2012. And over the course of time, became into a book, what I now have called Bullying in Sports, A Guide to Identifying the Injuries We Don't See.
Wow. That's great. So it sounds like at one level, the topic found you more than you finding it, almost accidentally. And of course, I put accidentally in quotes. Is that how it seemed to live for you, at least for a while?
Well, Mark, you know, I'm a coach, as are you, and we know there are no accidents. So it was just a matter of time until we until I kind of put it together. I had been a youth sports coach on the middle school, high school level for quite some time, and it was just a matter of time until I put sports and bullying together, and it just seemed the time was right, and things came together at that time.
Wow, great. So let me ask you this. I'm really curious about this now that you've said that. As you look back over your whole life, can you see other clues now in retrospect and in hindsight that kind of make sense that this would eventually become an important topic to you later in your life?
I think partly I grew up, my sport was baseball, and my dream was to play college ball and go on, and I just didn't have the talent. But I do have a number of memories, in particular of coaches that I looked up to and coaches that, when I was 10, 11, 12 years old, that in hindsight did things to kids in terms of their behavior that were just, I just don't know how they did it and they lived with themselves. I was a 12-year-old kid playing on a team called the Denver Reds out in southeast Denver, and the coach's name was Ron Higgins, and he was a well-known coach, and I just had a bad game against a team called Powell World Asleep, and I was playing second base. I was a 12-year-old kid, and three balls went underneath my legs. I made three errors, and so the first one I freaked out. Second one, by the third time, I was just completely lost. And after that game, he replaced me, and I didn't play another inning the rest of the season. It was about halfway through, and it sticks with me today in a matter of which it just shut me down. And it's painful, and I love the game. I love the sport, and he was a great coach in terms of learning, and I just don't think that because I wanted to learn more about it. I didn't know why it happened. I mean, I knew I messed up, but I figured, you know, I had one bad game. You know, everybody's allowed a bad game, but apparently you're not allowed a bad game at that age. And it was the beginning of kind of the travel kind of component of baseball, which has become a very sophisticated, very, very lucrative billion-dollar business today.
Wow. Yeah, I just feel my heart sinks, and I feel sad when you say, apparently you're not allowed to have a bad game at that age. It's like, what's the purpose of being involved in team sports, particularly at that age, or at any age for that matter? You know, it's about learning all the things you are to learn by being involved in team sports. It's about, you know, learning good stuff like that. So it just seems to be counter to that purpose to create or send the message to the people that are involved that you can't have a bad game or you lose something very important to you.
Well, what has really happened, Mark, is that over the past 20 years, there's begun what I call a consumerization of youth sports. That, you know, 60, 70 years ago with youth sports, it was just to keep kids off the street. It was stickball. It was fun. It was rec. And then came along this travel component of more competitive sports, which makes sense because there's some kids who excel, and so you create an environment in which they can compete. But then out comes this element of business and the cost. And every single sport has coaches for kids as young as 8, 9 years old, whether it's a hitting coach or pitching coach for baseball, a soccer specialist for goalies. In football, you have quarterback coaches as young as 8, 9 years old, and there's this element of having to focus on one sport and excel to one sport as young as 7, 8, 9 years old. Which is it's sad because sports are meant to have fun. They teach great life skills, but requiring a kid to focus on one sport at such a young age is just it's antithetical to what sports is really about in terms of being out there enjoying the game and learning what it means to have fun.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So talk a little bit, Randy, about the how that leads to the culture of bullying that you're talking about, and where does that come from? How does it relate to
it's unique in terms of the culture of bullying in sports. When I go and I speak, and I'm trained by the LVS Bullying Prevention Program, and travel throughout the Northeast on general bullying topics. There's there's a lot of uncertainty in terms of what is the definition of bullying. There's a lot of different definitions out there. However, those of us who are in the industry, those of us who are experts, understand that bullying really requires three things. It is aggressive in nature. It's behavior that's repeated for the most part, and it creates an imbalance of power. And those are the three pieces that separates bullying from conflict, separates bullying from, you know, just teasing and horseplay, and most people don't necessarily have a true understanding of what the definition is. It's that imbalance of power. You can have conflict where someone stands up for himself and you deal with conflict management or peer mediation, but when there's an imbalance of power, that changes the component of bullying. In sports, I was just speaking to a bunch of young high school students up in Wyckoff, New Jersey, just a short while ago, that if I was talking to them as a mental training life coach, which I do, I would tell them there's three things that I want you to think about when you be an exceptional athlete. You need to be aggressive. You need to go out, push yourself, force yourself, take the advantage. You need to repeat, and you need to repeat and repeat some more. You need to practice. That practice doesn't make perfect. That perfect practice makes perfect. And then in order to win, because we have a win-at-all-cost mentality, you have to create an imbalance of power, both physically and mentally. So ironically, in the world of sports, we are actually promoting a bully mentality.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Wow. So much comes to my mind as you're speaking that I want to go to because it's such a rich topic. So what? Where to begin? So what do you say to parents or teenagers, teachers, coaches that are saying stuff like, well, you know, you got to just realize that kids are just going to be kids. They're just learning. You're gonna toughen them up. It'll make them strong. And this kind of crapola that some people say. It's like, oh, you know, don't get involved. It's going to toughen them up. It's important. They got to learn how to defend themselves.
That is something that I'm facing. I've been accused of only wanting to sell books. And I was on a radio show in Philadelphia. Oh, that the reason why I got on is I wanted to sell books. And let me tell you, Mark, I got a book, but I don't make a lot of money from the book. But it stretched the imagination. I want to speak. I want to raise awareness. And that my goal was to make athletes wimps, that I am desensitized. I'm making them wussies, which is a word where you combine wimp and wussy with a P, right? And you combine those things. And that is, on the contrary, I do know that in particular within sports, we have a very large sense of homophobia that is pervasive in sports. And when it comes to male sports, the idea is that you got to be tough and you got to be strong, you got to be a man, and we push that mentality on kids, and that your coaches often talk about their players being soft, which means they can't take a hit, they can't do something. We got to turn these kids into men, and so we teach them that men don't cry and that men don't do certain things. You got to stand up and be strong. We certainly want our young kids to turn up to be outstanding leaders and content of character and individuals who make a difference. But when you do it in the confines of a win at all cost and demeaning others, we're training them in such a way where it's inappropriate. Because I get a lot of time in the sports world where kids use that symbol, that's so gay, and it drives me crazy. And whenever I hear it, it's always a teachable moment, whether I'm the coach of the team or I'm a bystanding parent. I'm like, whoa, because there's something to say in terms of belittling, in terms of what that means. It's derogatory in nature, and it's awful. It's pervasive in sports. And I'm not sure if you had a chance to if you Google male sports, you will see incredible athletes dressed up in, you know, Michael Jordan, you know, LeBron James, Tiger Woods, all looking appropriate like athletes. If you Google female athletes, what do you think you get, Mark?
I want to guess. Swimsuits, bikinis.
Exactly. And we're not talking, these female athletes aren't swimmers. They're golfers, they're tennis players, they're soccer players. And so within the world of sports, if a female athlete is good, well, the automatic assumption, they say, well, that's because she's a lesbian. And if a male athlete is soft, that's because he's gay. And it's something that we have seen. It happened a year ago with Steve Culliver, who was a defensive player for the San Francisco 49ers, when Artie Lang asked about gay football players, and he made the inappropriate comments. And now we have this wonderful young man coming out of Missouri who's had a horrendous life, who's had an incredible life in terms of overcoming adversity, who is openly and proudly gay. and has said, listen, you know, I'm gay, I'm coming to football. I think the other day we were joking, Mark. Imagine, you know, we're Jewish, you know. We have to announce that we're Jewish coming out playing football. I'm a Jewish football player, and see if that would harm us. There's not many of us. But certainly, it's just having to do that is just so shameful. But he is transforming the way we see it, football players, and it's about time.
Yeah. I'm glad you said that, actually, because there's nothing that incenses me more when someone comes out than people go, why do they have to make a big deal out of it and announce it? I don't announce that I'm straight. I don't announce that I'm white. I don't announce that I'm Christian, you know. And it's like, and you just really encapsulated it right there. So I really appreciate that. And, yeah, you know, it's amazing, too, how the whole notion of, you know, what masculinity is, right? And it's about being tough. And apparently straight men are tough, gay men are not. So if you're soft, you must be queer, right? That kind of thing. And,
well, that's the whole point that that comes about in the bullying, and especially what we call the locker room mentality in my book. I have a chapter called The Locker Room Mentality, which I wrote following the case that came out down in Miami with Jonathan Martin and Rich Incognito, because I started to get inside the mind frame of this whole idea, this excuse of locker room mentality, and the excuse that, well, football is a different sport, and that when I go and speak and I talk about behaviors in terms of how we treat kids as athletes, I get parents all the time coming up to me and saying, yeah, but football's different, as if because you play football, somehow you're excused over the kind of behavior. Now, I'm on the field, I get it, but it doesn't give you the right off the field to treat each other and talk to people and demean them and create that imbalance simply because you know how to play a football and throw it better than somebody else.
Yeah, it's – and that whole locker room mentality thing has always driven me crazy as well. And you're right, it does. It excuses a lot of bad behavior. It's really – it's intolerable. And one of the things that I was delighted about when I went back to Fairlawn High School to do my talk through the Live Out Loud program, which, by the way, I'll just put a plug in for while I'm at it. Live Out Loud is an LGBT youth organization that helps to support LGBT youth. And one of their programs is the Homecoming Project, where they look for adult LGBT positive role models who can go out there and give a positive message about, you know, where their lives have gone after growing up gay in the hallways of those high schools, to kind of give hope to other kids and raise awareness. So when I did that, I did my homecoming talk twice, actually, and the second time was to a group of a little over 100 kids. And it was really amazing. I talked about something related to the locker room mentality, and it was that the teachers that I had the biggest trouble with as a kid were the male gym teachers.
Yes.
And that's because, you know, because I was softer than most of the other kids. I didn't like sports to begin with. I still don't. So being made to play those sports, not that I'm against the concept of teaching kids those things and having them step outside of just, you know, just what they want to do, but because I didn't like it and wasn't very good at it, I was ridiculed, and the gym teachers were often no better than the other kids, or they at least didn't stop it, or they saw it as that's just, you know, what boys
it's
do.
It's a rite of passage, and it's somehow right you're wrong.
Right, exactly. And what was really great, in as we look at how have things changed, what was great was when I talked about that in my talk, about how the male gym teachers were the ones that were the most difficult and challenging for me, and then a gentleman raised his hand, and he says, I'm a gym teacher here. And he goes, and all the students in my classes are here. Because I wanted them to come and hear you talk, because I think this is an important topic, and a lot has changed since you went to high school here. Another gentleman came up to me later. He goes, I also am a gym teacher here, and I went to high school here as well about 10 years after you did, and things were bad then too. And he goes, I really want you to know how much things have changed. We don't tolerate that stuff here. And I was so thrilled to hear that, yet I'm also, you know, not blind to the fact that on the flip side of that, there's still so much more work to be done around that, and there's many places where not a lot has changed. And I'm sure you see that. You're on the forefront of that. You see that more than I do.
And as a matter of fact, it's even worse than what it used to be, Mark. What has happened, what's transpired, is as I mentioned, there's this consumerization of sports, and so many parents, many families, spend thousands of dollars on their kids to be prepared and trained to play high school sports. And in these programs, these coaches, whether it's soccer or baseball or tennis, these coaches have often offered praise of how amazing and great these kids are as athletes. And then when they get to high school and the high school varsity coach takes over, they've never seen these kids. They don't know the same players. And all of a sudden now we're talking about playing time. And parents are very concerned about playing time. And kids are concerned about playing time. Because when they're on a travel team, you can change travel teams to get your playing time. So these parents now have these expectations, and when their kids aren't playing, they get upset. And parents are now beginning to turn the table and using situations in sports where now they're claiming because of playing time, they're not being openly, you know, outward about it, but because of playing time are beginning to call the coach a bully coach, and coaches are being accused of situations that aren't real.
Wow.
And we call those the bully parents.
Yeah, so, you know, the parents really help to create that culture and certainly perpetuate it. We actually have a caller that I'd like to jump to. Let's go ahead and do that. So, caller from area code 972, go ahead. You're on the air on Mark My Words.
Hi, Mark. This is Thomas.
Hi, Thomas. How are you?
Good, good. You are one of my MBA coaches from Cornell, just so you know who this is.
Ah, yes. Yes, I do. Oh, I'm so glad you called in.
Yes, and I wanted to call in because what you were talking about, referring to the coaches, really resounded, because I was among the youngest kids in my class, not athletic, and I was really bullied by the coaches more than the students. The coaches sort of set the tone that it was okay to pick on me. And what became even more interesting was my job in high school was a sports reporter. So I got to meet 50-plus coaches in the surrounding cities. And out of those 50 coaches, I can still list the three I thought were decent people, which is a really horrible ratio.
Sure.
No, Thomas, it's great that you called in. Thanks for calling in. I want to say that part of my work is when I do talk to coaches. I was at a book signing event. Sports Authority is one of my partners and sponsors, and I was in Manalapan, and they had a bunch of dads and parents coming of 8- and 9-year-olds. And what was amazing, the people who approached me the most as far as my book, Mark, you'll find this intriguing, were the 8-, 9-, and 10-year-old kids. I had great conversations with them. The moms came over and said, oh, my gosh, we need to get these books in the coaches' hands. And all the dads or the coaches, they have this certain mentality, this certain bravado about walking around, and, like, they've got something to do in terms of this impression of what it means to be a coach. And it's something that we need to address because most of these coaches aren't trained. Unlike your school coaches, these are just dads who are going out there, have no idea really what they're doing. Maybe they played a sport, but we're allowing people to work with our kids who don't have the necessary credentials to work with kids.
I want to clarify that the 50-plus coaches I knew were all high school coaches.
Well, and that furthermore talks about the importance of why we have to go in there.
And the one thought I wanted to leave you with before I let you guys continue was the repercussions of what happened. Because I went on to have a very successful academic career, and I became a bully in the workplace. If you told me you were athletic or a coach, I would belittle you.
Huh.
I would give you horrible assignments. I would treat you horribly. It took me 10 years to get over that. So the repercussions of this are also worth discussing because these things aren't thought about. But if you ran into me in my late 20s, early 30s, and I thought you were athletic, I was going to make your life hell.
Well, it would certainly make sense. A little payback.
I did the payback for several years. It took me a while to get over it. I am over it now, thank goodness. But I think that's something that's got to be considered. It's how you reach out to people like me who were bullied and how you can stop us from exacting revenge because I seriously hurt people's careers.
Yeah.
Well, Tom, I listen, it's something that falls right in line with why I'm focusing initially on bullying in sports. Mark, can I spend a couple minutes on this?
Sure, go ahead.
So part of what my goal is that we are a very sports-centric culture. One out of two kids in high school plays at least one sport. In some situations, 3 out of 4 kids. There are 50 million kids that play athletics throughout this country. And you take the parents that are involved, The thing is corporate America, Mark, loves athletes. We love them.
Right.
They want to hire them, and they also like the fraternity and sorority kids and girls, because often those kids that are involved with fraternities and sororities were athletes in high school. And so there's a certain mentality that corporate America loves. And the further extension of what goes on in bullying in sports is how we create that mentality in corporate America. I mean, it makes complete sense for someone who's bullied his whole life. It's learned behavior. And clearly he learned, and he just openly acknowledged it, which takes a lot of courage to say, listen, I became a bully in the workforce because, you know what, I saw that it worked. I can make someone's life a living hell. I could be aggressive, I could repeat the behavior, and I was able to create an imbalance of power. And bullying is a learned behavior that needs to be addressed. And it's not just a school issue. It's a community issue. It's a political issue. It's a human issue. Unfortunately, the word bullying, when you say that word bully, people roll their eyes because they think, ugh, that's just child's play.
Right. Sure. So Thomas, I'm interested in something you said that, you know, a very small percentage of the coaches that you've met were what you would call decent people. What would be some of the characteristics of a coach that you would characterize as a decent person in contrast to the others that that seem to overwhelm the market?
There were some that really stand out. One was a coach by the name of Paul Smerian. I think he's now passed away. He had a slight speech impediment. His voice was really rough. But I never once heard him curse at his team. And they didn't have a very good team either. But, you know, just the way he treated the boys, it was a football team. He was much more engaged with them. The respect that some of the other coaches gave for their students was just, that was what stood out, not cursing at them, not yelling at them, being a positive attitude, not being abusive. I mean, the abusive language hurled at these high school kids was an R-rated movie for most of the coaches.
Sure.
The feelings that they put on these kids if they didn't win was of absolute and abject failure. So the coaches that didn't do that were what I admired. They were, I guess, more feeling more professional.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, what I'm kind of hearing is interesting because it alludes to what Randy said, too, about corporate America and the parallels there, right? So with all the corporate coaching and stuff that I do, I'm always aware of what makes a good leader, what makes a good business leader, what makes a good manager, a good executive. And it's really the same characteristics. It's really the same characteristics that you're speaking of. You know, what happens when people, quote-unquote, mess up? You know, how does the leader respond to that? And really, it's the same thing for the coaches. It's what we call in the IPEC coaching world being an anabolic leader. You know, one who really leads from a place of creating win-wins and not from a place of I'm better than you and there's right and wrong. So Thomas, thank you. I appreciate your call very much. Thanks for calling
Tom.
In. And
thanks. Appreciate
take
it.
Care.
Bye.
So great. So before we go on, I just want to take a little quick break about the next three shows that are coming up, and here on the Life Coach Radio Network. So starting with this coming Tuesday at 8 p.m., we've got New You City Chat with Danielle Mercurio. Your city, Danielle's business. Turn on the light within you to ignite your life on fire. Make your spirituality sparkle. Fall in love with someone adorable. Be in love with your town and find yourself in the process. Danielle is a lifestyle coach that helps you manifest your dreams into reality through intuitive coaching, guided meditation, and astrology and tarot readings. She can help you find everything from getting a hot body to landing an amazing career to obtaining inner peace. And then following that, the next show up on Life Coach Radio Network is on Thursday at 2 o'clock p.m., and that is Walk Your Talk with Leanne and Crystal Lyons, Cowgirl Logic. Leanne is a certified professional coach, and her specialty is working with adoptees and their families. And her heart is all in helping adoptees and their families build bridges, not walls, in all of their relationships. So she'll be joined this week by singer and songwriter Crystal Lyons, who is a woman of many talents, including writing monthly articles for 8 magazines across the U.S. and producing a 2-minute radio spot that's catching on like wildfire called Cowgirl Logic. She's recorded 9 CDs. She travels to rodeos, Western events, and she's just pretty amazing. So tune in there. That's, again, on Thursday at 2 p.m. for Walk Your Talk with Leanne and Crystal. And then we've got on Friday at 12 noon, Train Your Brain to Up Your Game with Coach Mandy. So join Coach Mandy Rozniak of Inner Winning Coaching on Friday at noon. This week, her show is going to be all about honoring love, truth, and fulfilling our purpose. It's going to be a tribute to her father, who recently passed away, and we'll be discussing living life to its fullest with no regrets. She'll be joined by fellow coach Lori Fortuna, who also can speak of learning from a loss and then follow your true life purpose and passion. So, Mandy, my condolences to you and your family as I keep you all in my thoughts, and condolences to you on the passing of your father. And then lastly, my next show, 2 weeks from tonight, here on Mark My Words, I will be interviewing a Mr. Claude Saffel. And Claude's specialty as a coach is coaching dads. He coaches men who want to be better fathers to their children. He's got some amazing, amazing things to say. He's done some really great work, and very proud of him because he's also a former student of mine. So it should be sure to tune in 2 weeks from tonight at 9 o'clock for Mark My Words while I interview Claude. And now back to this episode. So I lost track, Randy. Where were we before our caller called in?
No, it's great to have someone call in. I know that I've got my dad listening down there in Aventura, Florida, and, of course, my amazing wife, Jess, listening, just putting our kids to bed. She's on, and appreciate the chance to be here. We were just talking about the variables that we're learning in terms of bullying and that it's not so simple. Part of what got me involved as I started looking at bullying in sports is there has not been research done on this specific area in over 20 years. The last time there was some kind of specific study research on bullying in sports was in 1993, and it was out of Minnesota, but it focused a lot on coaches' behavior and how they treated players. A lot of times, one of the areas of concern is that our players being pushed too hard, and a lot of times we have seen injuries have gone up significantly in sports-related injuries, probably because players are being pushed to come back. A couple of years ago, concussions were not where they are today. I often say that bullying in sports today is where concussions were a couple of years ago, where if you got your bell rung, they would look at you and say, shake it off and get back in. Now there's protocols in place to ensure that kind of behavior stopped and we don't put kids in harm's way and we have our brains. And it started off as a small movement, and now it's very large, and it's nice. And so I'm hoping that this concept of bullying in sports takes the same kind of fire and kind of gets lit. It's taking time, mm-hmm. but it's dealing with that white elephant in the room, Mark, and no one likes to deal with those kind of issues.
Yep, absolutely. I think it's a pink elephant, isn't it?
Pink, it's a purple baboon, it's a gorilla, white elephant, it's that thing that people notice that no one wants to talk about.
That's right. The white elephant, I think, is that's when you give somebody a gift that somebody gave you the previous year and you re-gift it. I think it's a white elephant. it's interesting, too. I really liked what you said about corporate America, too, because, of course, that's where I focus a lot of my coaching. And I'm seeing a parallel that I've not quite seen in all the talking that we've done leading up to tonight's show, Randy, and that is you talked about how it's the commercialization, when it starts becoming about money, that the purpose completely shifts, the focus completely shifts, and quote-unquote bad stuff starts happening. Right?
Correct.
And same thing happens with businesses and companies. How many businesses and companies get started with a really great social purpose in mind? And then somehow, as money starts entering the picture more and more and more, the focus, rather than being on who's supposed to be served by this, becomes on making the stockholders and the shareholders and whatnot more money.
Correct.
And that, of course, means that the people originally that were going to be served by what this company does end up getting the short end of the stick.
Correct.
And that's really kind of what's happening now. It's these teen athletes that are getting the short end of the stick, ultimately, because of the grown-ups that want to make money off of this.
Correct. And it's unfortunate. And a lot of times dreams are exacerbated and embellished. and because of business needs to stay in business, and they know that in order for them to stay in business, they need to have clients. And there's a lot of great travel programs out there that are in it for the right reason. I'm involved with a company called Ballplayers Edge in Cedar Knoll, New Jersey, and those guys understand that it's really about the kids. But there are others here in the area that are concerned about the dollars and push and focus and push more and push more and charge thousands of dollars. And parents pay that money with the expectation of some kind of return on that investment.
Right. Right. And how much do you think, Randy, that kind of stuff is motivated by the parents trying to live out some of their own hopes and dreams that maybe they didn't get to live out, and they're trying to live that through their kids. And they're really on their own agenda, not on their kids' agenda.
Well, that goes, I mean, it's really involved with sports, but I think a lot of parents, we're so concerned about our kids being right and being successful, and I have other presentations where I talk to kids about the blueprint of life and how it's always about getting good grades to get into a good college, to get a good job, to make a lot of money, and to be happy. And that's just not a blueprint, but most parents believe that is. So certainly within sports, there seems to be a chance to potentially make it easier. And when you start throwing around seven-figure salaries for the pros, it makes sense for parents to want to invest when people are saying how wonderful and amazing their kid is an athlete.
Mm-hmm. So what are some of the other farther-reaching impacts of bullying on the school environment as a whole, on the community as a whole? Because you said before, it's a school problem, it's a community problem. So what are some of those farther-reaching, longer-term impacts that sometimes are even harder to address?
Well, as we discussed, I had mentioned this culture of bullying, and so we inculcate kids to think and act like bullies, even though that's not the overall intention. And so when kids and athletes walk around school, the hallway spreads so these kids can walk in. They're wearing their jerseys. It's very intimidating. One of the most common traits of popularity for male high school students is being good at sports. For females, it's being pretty. And so if your parents know this, is they want their kids to be liked in school, and it increases the chances significantly. Within schools, what I often talk to as far as far-reaching, what we don't realize is generally 5% of the student population are the actual bullies themselves. 10% are what we call as targets, and we're removing the word victim from our conversations because they're not victims, they're targets of bullying, and so we want to remove the victimization of it, and as a coach you can appreciate that. 85%
sure.
of the population are bystanders. People just stand and walk by and don't do anything. And there's various forms of bystanders, and I go into great detail of the aggressive forms and the passive forms of bystanders, but since that's learned behavior, as a bystander in high school, you become a bystander in college, you become a bystander at work, and we never get a chance to stop that cycle. In work, when it comes to bullying, we call it politics. We call it the glass ceiling. We call it the executive washroom. We have different names, but the element of bullying is not just focused on youth. It goes beyond the pale and goes within the corporate component.
Wow. Yeah, it's the bystander piece, too. In fact, when I did my talk at Fairlawn High School, I talked about becoming an upstander instead of a bystander, which is about really speaking up and standing up.
You know me, that's a big part. That's a big part of what this book is about. My goal with writing this is to identify the bully culture, identify bully coaches, bully parents, bully players, also focus a lot on officials and what I refer to them as a universal target in bullying in sports, because parents, players, and coaches all go after officials, which is horrendous. There's so many stories out, and I've been in touch with the National Association of Officials, and the stories of humiliation, intimidation, injuring, physical altercations, and we're talking with athletes as young as 8, 9 years old. This is not high school only. And in the third part of my book, is I focus on what I call the game-changer attitude, meaning that in sports, a game-changer is someone who dramatically alters the course of a game. It could be Michael Jordan and LeBron James on the national level, but kids in high school who in a moment take the ball in basketball and they control the game and they win the game for their team. I want to use sports as a gateway to better implementation of bullying intervention and prevention, meaning since most schools have 50 to 60% of their population already involved with sports, we need to do a better job with the athletic directors. which then do a better job with the coaches because the coaches need to have a better understanding of their behavior and consequences. We have the coach up at Boston University now who's just been accused of bullying her basketball players, the girls' basketball players. Four girls came out on this weekend. Two more just came out today in terms of claiming bullying by a coach. And then once we help raise awareness with our coaches, coaches can hold their players accountable in a whole different way. The bond between a player and coach is special and unique. A student-teacher relationship is great, it's nice, and it's worthwhile, but the coach-player bond is much more unique and much more powerful. And if coaches begin to help raise awareness with their players, hold their players accountable for the behavior, either as bullying behavior or bystander behavior, we have a greater chance to impact the culture of a school and the community because everybody in town supports sports. And that way we can help kids understand the impact and help them become leaders, gain an element of acceptance, and become upstanders on the field and off the field.
Yeah. So it starts, you know, it starts at the top. And again, in corporate coaching, that's the same case too. You know, we talk about things like valuing diversity in the workplace because I've done tons of diversity training, or just you know, role modeling of effective leadership behaviors. That if you want your team in your business to operate in X, Y, or Z manner, then you need to role model that from the top. Which is why we always talk about how it's the business leaders that need the training first. Right, and I'm hearing again the parallel for that in the sports world. It's got to start at the top. It's got to start with the coaches. They need to really understand the impact they have and be concerned about the impact that they have. And they say a fish stinks from the head down, right? So if there's a problem at the bottom, well, it's usually because it's a problem at the top, and that's what you're addressing.
It's certainly supposed to, and that's the hard part. Is when I speak to a lot of teachers, and teachers are very difficult. Audience to speak to. Coaches are even more so. Coaches have a very set way in how they see things. A lot of coaches emulate what they learned from their coaches in terms of how to coach, which leads me to believe that we need to begin to break that model. A lot of coaches refer to themselves as old school coaches, and I'm not a big fan of the old school coach because I don't have an old school phone. I don't have an old school laptop. I don't even drive an old school car. I don't think any of us do. It's an excuse for us to learn how to tolerate unacceptable behavior. What's amazing about that kind of behavior is you take a teacher in a classroom, right, give them a whistle, all of a sudden the personality changes. You would never allow a teacher in a classroom to scream and yell, curse and drop F-bombs at a student for doing lousy on a test in the same capacity that we allow coaches on the field to scream and humiliate players on the field. It would never be allowed. It's unacceptable. But yet in sports, because of the culture, we seem to think that's okay. And we embrace it as parents. We embrace it as adults. And kids and players learn that that's acceptable behavior, and they have no choice but to feel helpless in the matter which is being done.
Yeah. Wow, that's never thought about it that way also. It's like we tolerate behavior from coaches that we would never tolerate from teachers. Teachers would get fired for doing half the stuff that coaches do.
Yes,
that we
they
tolerate.
Do. Absolutely, and we need to begin to look at those coaches and get rid of those so-called old-school coaches. Every player wants to be pushed. Athletes like to have an element of excellence. They want to be pushed. They want to be motivated. They want to strive to give their best. They want to stay focused, have a great attitude, and be part of an incredible experience, in particular if they're involved with a team sport. What they don't want is to be belittled, to be humiliated, to be broken down as if there's some kind of small piece of the cog where they don't matter and they're insufficient. That's not what sports is about. We need to learn and teach kids to build them up and help building them up, even if they're not going to be the starting nine or the starting five, that there's still some way to contribute and help off the bench and be part of a successful team experience.
And that's the intent. And that's gotten lost. That's gotten lost.
It has certainly gotten lost, Mark.
Go ahead.
I'm just saying that there used to be honor and integrity in sports years ago, and I think about the times when baseball was a national pastime and athletes would walk the streets and meet people and shake hands, and there was honor, there was integrity. And, yeah, in some situations, some of the athletes were a little bit on the party side and drinking and dancing, but we forgave them for that because they were decent human beings. And then over the course of time, when sports became a 24/7, when we have the chance to watch any sport across the world and it becomes a focus of how much money. We're listening right now within football. The NFL is going, all these free agents, $15 million here, $10 million here, $25 million here. It's happening. We're so inculcated with these messages about money and the glory that it comes from it, we're losing what sports are really about in the general population. It's not necessarily about the seven figures. It's about teaching kids a chance how to work together, learn how to overcome adversity, be part of something bigger than who they are, and develop skill sets and life lessons that really do make a difference over the course of their life.
Sure. We're talking about breaking a cycle of abuse, much in the same way we talk about, you know, child abuse in the home, and breaking the cycle there. It's really the same thing, because what you're talking about is a lot of these coaches have faced this kind of behavior when they were younger, and that's all they know how to do.
Correct.
And it just perpetuates itself.
That's why I claim that we've allowed this kind of culture to exist for generations. This is one of the first books that I can gather. And Mark, I spent over 2 years working on this, and every time I would go on and Google bullying in sports, and there's articles, and there's a couple DVDs, and there's some things going out there, but there's no book that specifically addresses bullying in sports. So I realize I'm kind of doing an uphill battle, because by a coach purchasing this book or an athletic director purchasing this book and giving it to his or her coaches means that we're beginning to acknowledge that something is going on that's wrong, and we need to take care of it and change it.
Yep. So, Randy, what advice would you give for, say, anybody who has contact with a kid who's experiencing the downside of this stuff, whether the kid is complaining about it and knows it and is asking for help, or the kid is a victim and is learning the bad patterns and is trying to deal with it on his own and might not even acknowledge or recognize that something is wrong? What interventions are helpful? What strategies are helpful? Because I think a lot of the listeners to tonight's show tend to come from a place of kind of already knowing a lot of this stuff and do have the compassion and do want to see change. So we're preaching to the converted a little bit. So equipping them with some of the tools to help combat it, what are some pointers that you would give to folks who want to attack this?
Well, the key thing, and that's great that you asked that, because I'm dealing with a situation. We have a situation in town. I was speaking at my synagogue a couple weeks ago when I kicked off the book, and one of the fathers came over to me and said, listen, talk to my son. He needs to talk to you. And so we started talking about a situation. In his he plays basketball, and the coach is known to be a bully coach, and he started to defend him because it's the way it is. He's just making us better. And he began to validate and acknowledge all the things that he was doing in front of his peers. Well, it was a great conversation. It was a great debate, so to speak. When I left, he pulled me aside and said, listen, coach, I got to tell you, there's no doubt what I'm experiencing is bullying. I didn't want to say it in front of my friends because I couldn't handle them coming after me and almost acknowledging and validating what was going on. I just couldn't do that. It would be too hard for me. But I didn't know what to do. Mm-hmm. And the thing is, if you go back to the three components of bullying, aggressive, repetitive, and an imbalance of power, the idea is you need to create a balance of power, which is what you're seeing in the situation at BU with the coach, is that players are stepping up. And that's the hard part, is no one wants to be that kid, that player who steps up against the coach because they're afraid it's going to end up making their life miserable. Now, the good thing about travel sports is you no longer have to play a high school sport to play a college sport. Because there's so many travel experiences in baseball and basketball, you can go on and play a college sport without even having to play an inning or a minute in a high school varsity game. So that's no longer a situation where you have to. That's the only route. On the other hand, there's a thing that I talk about that kids feel helpless. Parents feel helpless. And the component is that when parents get involved, emotions often run wild. It's helping kids learn how to advocate for themselves, but also being prepared to learn what the coach has to say may not necessarily mesh very well. It might make them hurt their feelings. However, we're dealing with a generation of kids that have a very, very difficult time overcoming adversity. So in my situation, as a parent, the lesson here is not about the sport. The lesson is learning how to overcome the adversity, how to overcome the challenge, and working through it. The lifelong lesson is not going to be about playing for a great coach. It's going to be the lifelong lesson about this happened to me, and this is how I overcame it. On the other hand, if it's to the point to where the kid is suicidal, then that is a mental illness and certainly needs to be taken care of. But part of what has happened in the world of bullying is suicide and bullying have kind of been paired together. Some even call it bullycide. Mm-hmm. Suicide is a mental illness. Bullying exacerbates those thoughts, bullying certainly plays into it, and anybody who's ever experienced bullying, it makes complete sense to think about wanting to end your life because you want it to be done and over. However, when it comes to suicidal thoughts and those kind of, I just want to disappear, those require specific interventions that coaches are not prepared. I mean, in terms of life coaches, they need to seek out therapists to begin to understand those components of the suicidal thoughts.
Mm-hmm. Great. Yeah, and the whole suicide thing is just something that breaks my heart. We could do a whole other show on that, you know, on that alone.
We started the change on bullying back in April 1999, on April 20th, and that's when two kids out of Columbine High School went in who had been picked on and teased and bullied, got tired of it, and they sought out the jocks. Now, there's been mixing stories since that happened. For the most part, that's what we believe, and that's what we took from it, and we started looking, maybe we need to take this bullying situation to a whole different level, that our targets and these kids are now taking matters in their own hands. And then you fast forward to these kids like a Tyler Clementi, wonderful, sweet kid, freshman in college, September 2010, his roommate embarrasses him using cyber technology, gets cyber bullied, he takes his own life. And so we have these two extremes of targets, either taking matters in their own hand and creating significant violence and killing and murdering and maiming people, to the other where they don't have the coping skills to deal with it internally, and so they internalize it and they take their own life. Now, most kids fall in between, but that doesn't mean that we don't need to take a time and effort to really get to these kids and help them understand that there's a great website called itgetsbetter.org, that life gets better. And we have to help kids, whether it's in sports or not, understand that life is going to get better. Teenage years stink. Oh, it's awful, Mark. Oh, my God. Who would ever want to go to middle school again? You know, whoever want to go to high school again unless that's where you peaked? Those who peaked in high school hang out at high school because that's where they peaked. But it gets better, and sports is just a way to take up time to learn life lessons that 99.9% of the 50 million out there playing are just going to love the game, pass it on to their kids, and use it as some other way in life. And that, we have to get away from this whole concept of money and bling and all this thing and fame. Sports are great. Sports are a wonderful way for kids to connect. It keeps them out of drugs. It keeps them out of alcohol. It keeps them out of trouble. When done right, they're connected with role models of people who care. People can listen to them, people they can go to, and they can find a chance to support themselves in such a way where the greatest gift we can give kids is the gift of independence, and they can learn those skills on a field or on a court.
Very good, and I think that's a perfect closing message. It's about reminding people what is the original intent of team sports to begin with, and let's get back to that and really start empowering kids, because that has an impact on society as a whole. Because, I mean, again, we could do a whole other show on the overall impact of society and how this perpetuates other ills in society. So I think that if we get back to some of those basics, some other social ills might be cured too. So then,
Mark, bring me back. Bring me back again.
Yes, I would love to. I would love to. So let's talk about that and do a part two. It's always a pleasure to talk to you, Randy. It really is.
Thanks, Mark. It's been a long time. You're a great coach.
Thank you. As are you, and I talk about you a lot, actually, in some of the classes I teach, or sometimes just, you know, I'm a big storyteller. I love telling stories, right? So usually, no matter what the topic is, I have a story that relates. And sometimes, you know, if it's something about this topic, I always manage to mention, and I know a coach who does work in this area. His name's Randy Nathan. He's really awesome. So we belong to the Mutual Admiration Society, as the song from some Broadway show goes. Little League parents are as bad as high school theater parents too, in some ways. So it's not necessarily just secluded to the sports world.
Absolutely not, by no means.
Great. So thank you again, Randy. It's been
really great talking with you
this evening. And certainly. And so before we wrap up, I would like to invite everybody out there listening tonight to feel free to mark your words if you'd like. If you've got feedback for us, you'd like to communicate to the Life Coach Radio Network, just visit us at www.blogtalkradio.com/Life Coach Radio Network. Click on the follow button and send us a message. for feedback directly to me or to suggest a show topic, go to markmywordsradio.com, click on the home contact button, scroll to the bottom, and fill out the contact form. I hope you enjoyed the past hour and that you found it engaging, enlightening, and stimulating. And I look forward to speaking with you all again 2 weeks from tonight at 9 o'clock on the next episode of Mark My Words. Thank you for listening to Mark My Words. I'm Mark, and those are my words. Good night.